This is the Sean Hannity Show podcast.
All right, thanks, Scott Shannon. Welcome aboard. Glad you're with us. 2012, the year to defeat Obama and save America. Toll free, it's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. So here it is, the President of the United States, not the first time he has done this, goes out and attacks members of the Supreme Court justices. One has to wonder if he's been tipped off which way Obamacare is going to go. Here's what he said.
Ultimately, I'm confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. And I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Well, there's a good example, and I'm pretty confident that this court will recognize that and not take that step.
Not the first time he's done it. If you recall back at a State of the Union address, this is what the president said with the justices present before him.
It's time to put strict limits on the contributions that lobbyists give to candidates for federal office. With all due deference to separation of powers, last week the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections.
Member Justice Alito was shaking. He said, no, that's not true at the time. And one has to wonder if the president himself understands Marbury versus Madison, where the Chief Justice, John Marshall, established the principle of judicial review, which is an important addition to the system of checks and balances created to prevent any one branch of the federal government from becoming too powerful. And with the words of Justice Marshall, a law repugnant to the Constitution is void. Now, here to shed light on this, the latest attack on the Supreme Court, we are joined by Jay Sekulow, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, and Mark Levine is a former congressional attorney. Guys, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You know, it seems, you know, a law repugnant to the Constitution is void. It seems that is basic principle here. Do you get the feeling that maybe the president doesn't think that this is going to go his way?
You know, I was wondering, Sean, if the president is obviously he's concerned about what happened last week at the oral argument. So now what he's doing is relitigating the case and basically chastising the Supreme Court and the press. What concerned me was the statement which you played, which is the reminding us, conservatives, about judicial activism versus judicial restraint, and says that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law as an act of judicial activism. Well, actually, that is the role of the judiciary since Marbury versus Madison. And what the president fails to recognize and fails to state is that judicial activism is when a court creates a law when one does not exist, creates a right when one is not set forth in the Constitution. That's judicial activism. But if judicial activism striking down a law that's unconstitutional, the Supreme Court's been doing that since 1803. Last thing I'll say on this, Sean, and this is my concern, the president continues this public chastisement of the Supreme Court of the United States, talking about the constitutionality of the individual mandate, talking about how he thinks the case should go, reminding the justices, he said, that in the absence of the individual mandate, you can't put these changes in place. Well, the case was argued last week. The judges, the justices have voted. Decisions will come out in 2 months. But this public reprimand of the Supreme Court now in front of two foreign leaders, that's what's unprecedented here.
Actually, I don't think it's unprecedented at all. Andrew Jackson famously said to Chief Justice John Marshall, when he told him to stop moving the Indians, the Native Americans, he said if he can have his army, he can enforce his law. Look, no one disputes that judicial review exists. No one disputes that the United States Supreme Court can overturn a law if it's unconstitutional. But it's just as much judicial activism to strike down something when it's clearly constitutional as it is to create a right that's not in the Constitution. And four separate whatever provisions of the Constitution clearly make this constitutional. It's the power to tax, the power to provide for the general
welfare. Well, they said it's not. Hold it, Michael. They said it's not a tax.
Wait, stop right here, because we can go back. If you remember, we had two justices having to remind the Solicitor General last week that it was a penalty, not a tax. So, wait a minute. You can't argue that it's the power to tax when the argument that they're saying is the opposite.
Well, Paul Ryan does. The chairman of the House Budget Committee has put forward the Supreme Court oral argument, which is the same as Obamacare.
Stop for a second. No. You're not being logical here because they argued before the Supreme Court that it is not a tax. That is the position.
That was Monday's argument.
That was their argument.
It's Monday.
And if you remember, the Solicitor General was laughed at because he couldn't distinguish and he kept mixing up the word tax and penalty.
You think there's a tremendous distinction between taxing everyone and then reducing the taxes for people that don't do something and keeping everyone taxed the same and raising the taxes for people that don't do
something. What does that have to do with congressional authority, Mark?
It's the exact same thing one way or the other.
Then why didn't the Solicitor General of the United States just get up and say, Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, this is a tax, we acknowledge it's a tax, this is a tax, and we're using our taxing authority. Why didn't he say that?
Because on Monday's argument, it was a question of the Anti-Injunction Act.
No, stop for a second. That's nothing to do. Why didn't he say it was a tax?
Right.
Because there's a reason for it.
That's why.
No. In his view, under the Anti-Injunction Act, which is a specific act that says you can't sue until a tax has been collected, it wasn't a tax under that 19th century act, which, frankly, isn't an argument that many people are focusing on. That was Monday's argument. The question
is, a lot of people are focusing
mandate.
On it because it was the first time the government said it's constitutional under any one of these provisions.
This was the first time that they acknowledged what was so obvious and evident to everybody that it was a tax, and they were parsing words, threading a needle, playing this game with the American people, it's not a tax, when we all knew, in fact, it was, and that's why the Solicitor General couldn't keep it straight, Jay.
But Sean...
Yeah, remember what Justice Breyer said, Mark? Justice Breyer said to the Solicitor General, who's a good lawyer and just had a bad couple of days, he said, you keep calling it a tax, you mean a penalty, right? Oh, yes, a penalty. They couldn't keep it straight because they were playing. They know that the American people would not have been sold this bill of goods if it was a tax. So then you had the Anti-Injunction Act. But don't you think, Mark, it's a little ridiculous? You're citing Andrew Jackson in the 1820s, 1830s. So in the last almost 200 years, no president has done this. And remember, he did say, let Chief Justice Marshall enforce it. And what did Chief Justice Marshall say? I still have the authority under Madison versus Marbury versus Madison to say a law is unconstitutional. It's right. The Constitution doesn't give the judiciary the police power. But isn't it ridiculous that the President of the United States is relitigating this case in front of foreign dignitaries, leaders
Not
of foreign
all.
Governments?
Not at all. Here's
and he,
the thing,
oh, please.
Once the United States Supreme Court determined that they were in charge, that they could choose our elections, they could choose our president.
Well, you think Marbury is wrong?
Americans count the votes.
So you think Marbury versus Madison is wrong?
No, Marbury versus Madison is fine. What's not fine?
It's just not fine when you don't like the opinion
Court
it gives.
Who don't read the Constitution of the United States?
Oh, please!
There are four separate provisions in Article 1, Section 8, and Jay, you know as well as I do that every precedent supports the individual mandate.
Stop for a second, because we're arguing. You want to argue the merits of the case, but we are talking about here the intimidating tactics and unprecedented tactics, for the most part. That is routinely employed by the president and by his aides. The second time now he's targeted the highest court in the land, which, if we believe in separation of powers, this is nothing short of intimidation, presidential abuse of power, and frankly, an ignorant abuse of presidential powers, and frankly, disgraceful while they're in the middle of deciding a case.
Well, yeah, conservatives have attacked the judiciary.
Give me an example of a president that has done that.
I've attacked the Warren Court? Nixon attacked the Warren Court. I mean, conservatives have always attacked the court.
Once a decision's been rendered, there's nothing wrong with this.
Hold on. The problem is what you're saying when you're doing it.
Mark, this is a case that's clearly constitutional. Don't you think it's a little bit non-presidential for the president of the United States to say, I quote, I think it's important. I think the American people understand, and I think the justices should understand that in the absence of the individual mandate, you cannot have a mechanism to ensure that people with pre-existing conditions get health care, which is also interesting, Sean, besides the fact that he's lecturing the justice of the Supreme Court after they voted. Remember, they said the individual mandate was severable. That was Wednesday's argument. So now the president's kind of backtracking all of this. You know what the reality is here? If a Republican president would have come out challenging the Supreme Court before a decision was rendered, The other side would be going ballistic. All we're doing is pointing out the obvious. This is the second time of the public in public that the President of the United States, President Obama, has chastised the Supreme Court when they were sitting in front of him and
they remember they decided not to
leaders.
Go. They decided not to go back. It was such an unprecedented
Correct.
Insult to them. You know, it's amazing too on a lot of fronts here because the president, first of all, the law did not pass with a strong majority. It was passed 219 to 212. And remember, then we had the Cornhusker kickback, the Louisiana. Can I finish?
Republican filibuster.
No, he did not. If you recall, they used the reconciliation process after the election of Scott Brown because they couldn't muster up the 60 votes. So they changed the rules in the middle of the game to pass this through in the middle of the night. So you're wrong again, Mr. Levine. But on a deeper level, he doesn't understand what judicial activism is. Judicial activism is not overturning an existing law, especially one that at its core is unconstitutional. That's what we're talking about. The Chief Justice Marshall said, "What judicial activism is when judges invent new rights that are not in the Constitution."
It's also when judges strike down something that is
in
the Constitution.
Romney
and Paul Ryan all believe this is constitutional.
To overturn.
That's why they all supported.
That's
this
not true.
No, first of all, Romney had an estate related. You know, you're trying to make this
shift this to a
GOP problem. You know why you're complaining everything, Mark, because you know that with the president, what he did here was ignore the separation of powers. That's the reality. Your side had a bad week last week. Does that mean the case is going to go against you? Who knows? We all know this. Arguments can go well and you can still lose a case. They can go bad and you can win a case. You had a bad week in court. The president knows it. That's why he had his press secretary come out in support of his solicitor general, who just frankly is a very good lawyer and had a bad couple of days. It happens.
Between the Supreme Court ruling on an ambiguous provision of law can go one way or the other, and the United States Supreme Court taking power. For example,
why are you screaming?
Gore, when the American people elected Gore,
why are you screaming?
Don't count the votes.
I'll tell you why he's screaming.
Going back to Bush versus Gore, you mean 13 years ago?
Well, let me just point out one other thing here.
I care when the American people don't get to choose the president.
The reason, well, they actually did, and your side lost, and you're going to have to get over it. I know it's still an open wound for some of you radical libs, but that's just too bad. You know, look at somebody like Ruth Marcus. I mean, she writes in the Washington Post today, and this is pretty interesting, that she saw it as unsettling what the president did, his preemptive strike on the Supreme Court. And she went on to say that Obama's assault on an unelected, quote, group of people stopped me cold because as a former constitutional law professor certainly understands it is the essence of our governmental system to vest in the court the ultimate power to decide the meaning of the Constitution, even if, as the president says, it means overturning a duly constituted and passed law, which was what the heart of Marbury versus Madison was about.
Right.
There's a difference. The difference is the Supreme Court can't just say, we don't like the law, it's gone.
They're not going to say that.
They can't just say, we don't like the law, we don't like Obama, this law is gone. They have to find something in the Constitution.
Did you hear President Obama's name mentioned once at the Supreme Court?
So
did you hear one justice?
Would be overturn
like talking to himself.
A century of precedent.
You know what's amazing? No, it would not be overturned. You see, because everything you're saying is predicated on your political belief and your love of Obama and your love of socialized medicine. And that is that you believe it's constitutional when, in fact, it is not. And to make the comparison with Romney Care, which was done on a state level, even those arguments came up last week, if you were listening closely enough, and how the differences and the distinction would be between the state and versus what the federal government and their power is under the Constitution. And secondly, the justice has brought up, how far does this go? Do we mandate people get cell phones? Do we mandate they have to eat broccoli because it's good for them? Where does the mandate end? In your socialized world, probably nowhere. You have unlimited powers for the government. That's not what our founders believed in. You
know, John, there's a difference between whether something's constitutional and whether something is wise. Okay,
yeah,
Congress
hold on,
has all
see,
kinds of powers to do stupid things. I wouldn't say they should mandate having cell phones. The question is not what is
Congress
wise, but what is in the Constitution. And in the Constitution, Congress can regulate interstate commerce. And
do
even
you think
Justice
they could mandate
found
we all have cell phones?
That a woman growing marijuana for her own use see. Was within Indian interstate commerce.
You're giving me a talking point headache. It's exactly Jay's turn.
Okay, Mark. Let's look at a couple things here. Number one, I'm surprised that the left is disparaging the Supreme Court of the United States,
Jay,
as they have been for Jay, the last
don't be
week.
Surprised. Don't be
well,
surprised.
Well, you know why? Because it's bad politics and it's bad policy. And I think it actually backfires. Now, Sean, I understand why they're doing it, because it's preemptive strike in case it goes wrong, when nobody knows exactly how this case is going to go out except the justices and their law clerk. But to the idea that a decision that the mandate was unconstitutional is some kind of judicially activist decision is ridiculous. It's determining that Congress did not have its authority. And by the way, Governor Romney has been very clear that his plan in Massachusetts was a state plan. States have the right to do it. That's very different than a federal plan. But here's the question. Either the Commerce Clause allows it or it doesn't. And five justices of the Supreme Court will be the majority one way or another. And I may not like the way the decision goes at the end of the day, but I'm going to respect it. I'm going to say elections have consequences. And when you get justices on there that have a liberal judicial philosophy, that's what you get. And I'm sure the conservatives, the liberals will be saying, well, if it goes my way, the conservatives see that's why we've got to have more conservative justices. That's fair. What's not fair is litigating this case in the media from the president of the United States' mouth in front of two global leaders. That was outrageous.
All right, we're going to end it right there. We appreciate your time. Thank you for being with us. It is unprecedented and way over the top. We got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll check in with Newt Gingrich. Is he going to team up with Rick Santorum? We'll get the answer to that and much more straight ahead.
The biggest newsmakers, the best coverage, and the issues you care about every single day. This is the Sean Hannity Show. Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you anywhere you go. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, when we come back, it's primary day in Wisconsin, Maryland, and D.C. We'll check in with Newt Gingrich next, then Governor Romney at the top of the hour. And Governor Palin co-hosted the Today Show this morning. She'll be on Hannity tonight. And also, we are going to analyze the results as they come in. The best election coverage, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Also, Dana and Stewart tonight and much more. And set your DVR. We'll continue.
We know you never want to miss the Sean Hannity Show. And now you never have to. Just sign up for Hannity Headlines. A bite-sized version of the show that you can take with you on your laptop, your mobile phone, everywhere you go. Even to your liberal in-laws' place in Vermont.
So, yeah.
And after a few hours of that, you'll be glad you brought Sean along. To sign up today for Hannity Headlines, go to Hannity.com.
All right, as we roll along, Sean Hannity Show, best election coverage, toll-free. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. We got big primaries. We'll have full coverage tonight on Hannity, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. By the way, Governor Palin will be in studio with us as she co-hosted the Today Show today, and we'll have some of those highlights as we are covering the primaries, Wisconsin, Maryland, D.C., and elsewhere. And joining us now, presidential candidate, former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm watching the Obama world start to collapse with this latest report that a $2.2 billion solar company guaranteed by the taxpayers is also declaring bankruptcy following Solyndra into sort of fantasy land failure.
I think there's about 6, 7, or 8 now that have failed in the end. It just keeps going on, and the president keeps telling us, anyone that tells you to drill, baby, drill, we're doing that when, in fact, we're not.
Well, you know, it's amazing. He attacks the oil companies for their tax break when, in fact, he has wasted more money on subsidizing solar companies that have failed than the oil companies have gotten in tax breaks for actually producing oil. And it's an amazing thing to watch. And he doesn't seem to have any sense of understanding. I noticed that today, for example, he's attacking capitalism and saying the reason the economy isn't recovering is because of capitalism. Well, I don't know how we can get this across to him, but no, the reason the economy isn't recovering is because the Obama administration is anti-American jobs in virtually every manner. And they keep undermining the opportunities to create new jobs.
Well, he's attacking capitalism. He's attacking the Supreme Court. And he's even blaming Israel now for rising fuel prices.
And you may notice, by the way, the last week, the
and he says that because of their posturing on Iran.
Yeah. You may have noticed that the State Department last week refused to say that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel, even though the Israelis clearly have made it that. This is part of why I said one of the first executive orders I'd signed on inaugural day would actually move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, because as a democracy, the Israelis deserve to have the right to designate their own capital. I mean, it's just, but it just tells you the biases of the Obama administration, that it's blame Israel first. You might think they would point out that it's the Iranians who are causing the tension by their effort to build a nuclear weapon.
Well, I got to tell you, the idea that it's Israel posturing. More importantly, did you notice that the Israelis apparently had worked out a plan to one of the more difficult challenges for them is if they decide to take out the Iranian nuclear sites is where they're going to fly their planes and how they're going to refuel these planes. And then the administration reveals and leaks that it was over Azerbaijan. Did you see that?
I saw that, and that, if true, and I'm not sure it is, if true, that would be an amazing development, because it would give the Israelis a totally different avenue of approach from anything the Iranians had ever thought about.
Yeah, it's like we're tying, the administration's tying Israel's hands at such a critical time. You know, I wonder what Netanyahu was thinking when he heard that and saw the president whispering, tell Vladimir, listen, I'll take care of the missile defense system after I'm elected. You got to help me. You got to work with me here. I got it. What was Netanyahu thinking?
That's what, you know, I think anybody has to be worried about this administration. First of all, it makes you wonder how many conversations like that has he had with foreign leaders when there was no open mic.
Yeah, like with the case of Sarkozy. I got to deal with this guy every week, this guy you just called a liar.
Oh. That's exactly right. But also, I mean, what do the Iranians believe will happen after the election? What do the Chinese believe will happen after the election? And I can imagine this is an administration going around the world basically saying, look, give us a few more months, let us get reelected, and, you know, things will get good.
Did you hear Obama attacking you today?
Well, I don't know if he attacked me. He's attacking Paul Ryan's budget, and he suggested that it make the contract with America look like the New Deal. I mean, the question I'd ask the president is, which part of the contract was he opposed to? Is he opposed to welfare reform? Two out of three people went to work or went to school. Their incomes went up. The lowest point of child poverty in modern times was late in the 90s because the welfare reform had worked and families were making more money. He clearly was opposed to tax cuts. Was he opposed to 4 years of a balanced budget? My guess is he might have been, because it didn't give him a chance to run up even more government spending. But I just think what you're seeing is the most radical president in American history getting a little more desperate, and you're seeing the choice for the American people being made more and more and more obvious. You can go down the road of American energy production and $2.50 or less for gasoline, and really exciting breakthroughs. I mean, the breakthroughs in natural gas, for example, I have a newsletter that's coming out tomorrow that points out that with the dramatic decline in the cost of natural gas, all of a sudden fuel cell cars become possible, because natural gas is a basic ingredient for providing the power for fuel cells.
Yeah.
And they're now so inexpensive that it's just dropped from $7.97 per 1,000 cubic feet down to $2.07. Just a remarkable decline.
It's amazing. It really is. What are we to make of a couple of political reports out there? And, you know, I'm not sure what to believe, because I don't trust the media at all anymore. I've declared them dead and buried and gone. And but for the new media, I don't know if we'd get any accurate information from anybody. But there was one report that you and Governor Romney met in a hotel and had a meeting. And then there was another report that you and Senator Santorum were thinking of teaming up and sort of uniting the non-Romney vote.
Look, I talk with all of my many friends.
I know you too well. That is that you're starting your non-answer.
No, it's an answer. I've had a great talk recently with Governor Romney. I've had a great talk recently with Senator Santorum.
But you're not going to tell me, are you?
Well, I'm going to tell you that we're all three unified in our commitment to defeat Obama. That whichever one of us ends up as the nominee, we're all going to get together to beat Obama.
No, I agree with that. I mean, and it's really, really important. Look, I think at different points, and I think you were specifically and, you know, targeted when you were really rising in the polls. And I think it got really personal and really harsh. I mean, it's kind of hard to overcome that, isn't it? Because, look, for example, I spent a lot of time on Twitter, and I could tell you that all of your supporters are still angry over the attack ads against you. They're furious.
No, listen, I'm with them. I'm furious, too. And I think it was bad, and I think it was the wrong thing to do.
But I also think that we have to move on to the next stage, and that's why, you know, Calista's campaigning today in Delaware. I'm on the way to North Carolina. We're not backing off one inch. We're working our way towards Tampa, and we're also focusing more and more on the platform. And, you know, Governor Romney said he wanted to be severely conservative. That was his phrase, not mine. But at CPAC, he talked about being severely conservative. His communications director said, oh, no, it's all like an Etch-a sketch. You just shake it up and erase it all. Well, I think as we start talking about the platform, one of the challenges is for folks like Santorum and me to lay out for the governor a chance to be severely conservative and see whether he picks his consultants or whether he picks the conservative movement.
Can I ask specifically how those meetings went in both cases? Like, how did it go with you and Governor Romney?
They're positive. Look, we're all adults. We are professionals. We've been at this a long time. I've known Mitt since 1994. I've known Rick a little bit longer than that. This is a rough-and-tumble business. It's a little bit like the Super Bowl, you know. If the other team gets the ball and you knock on their tail, then that's not a personal assault. That's very tough.
That's the way the game's played. All right. And would there ever be a possibility that you and Senator Santorum would team up in the near future?
Well, that's where I think talking about the platform really matters. I think Governor Romney's going to decide in the very near future whether he wants to, in fact, be part of developing a genuinely, I'm not sure it'll be severely conservative, but that was his language, so I'm using it a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But is he prepared to work with us to develop a platform that's genuinely conservative, or is he going to stick with his consultants who want to have a blank slate?
Yeah, well, let me, you've said that you're, how do you see this going from here on in? I mean, right now, Governor Romney leads by about 300 delegates over Senator Santorum, who has about 265 at the last count. Apparently, what frustrates me is, and I don't understand how this is even possible, some of these delegates are still up for grabs and are not committed and have not actually been fully distributed. And I'm thinking, how is that possible?
But the elite media, and I've been, you lived through this with me as a good friend. The elite media began in June of last year to explain that my campaign was dead. This was a year ago. And that therefore I should get out. And every chance they've had, they've repeated that because the underlying message is that they would like me to get out. I think they'd like Santorum to get out. They'd like this to be over in a way that allows them to relax and feel like they control the Republican Party and they get to define who our candidate is and what we're doing. The fact is, and I'm going to send you a note, a very interesting note that Vince Haley developed for me. Rick and I together have a bigger popular vote than Mitt Romney by 900,000 votes. The two of us have gotten 5 million votes to his 4,100,000. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't give me any great incentive to get out. Uh-huh. And yet, of course, if you were to watch the news media, they discount all that. And they say, well, that doesn't really count. But I'm going to send you this note because it's a fascinating analysis that Vince Haley put together. As you know, Vince is now managing my campaign, and you've met him before. You know him.
Yeah.
Bright, bright guy. And I think you'll find this to be very, very interesting.
Well, you know, it's funny because I had Governor Romney on the program last week, and I said to him, I said, I was bringing up how there's a lot of resentment, and there is, among, different factions of the party. And I was asking him, would you seek input and support from somebody as smart as Newt Gingrich, somebody with the experience of Senator Santorum? And it seemed at that moment, more than any other time in any other interview, that he wants to bring about some type of healing.
I think, first of all, it's his interest to do that. I mean, he thinks he's on the edge of the nomination, and he wants the team to be united because he's not going to be able to beat Obama without a unified team. Second, this is a tough business, and it's always been a tough business. Alexander Hamilton, our first Secretary of the Treasury, got shot in a duel, for Pete's sake. So I think the U.S. have to recognize...
You're not suggesting there's going to be any duel before this is all said and done.
No, I'm just saying we have a long
I'm only kidding.
Tumultuous history as a country.
Listen, I one thing I want to say, and I've said this on the air, and you haven't heard it, but I've said this, I've been out on the road with all of you guys, and I mean this sincerely. And I know how committed all of you are to your country and getting this country saved and salvaged from the mess we're now in. And people, I don't think, really appreciate how brutal a process this is that you go through every day while running for president. It's brutal. And I'm just being honest.
Sure. No, it is a challenge, and you've got to work your way through it. And I think that if you're willing to, it's also an enormous honor. I mean, we were in Frederick, Maryland yesterday at the local Ford dealership, and over 100 people would come out just spontaneously. And, you know, and people walk up to you and say they're praying for you. And one gentleman who was a World War II veteran came up, and he just had tears in his eyes. And he said, "I can't believe I'm standing here shaking your hand." And he couldn't talk. I mean, that is such a humbling experience to have that kind of outpouring of support that it makes you really feel an obligation to America to try to do your very best.
Yeah. What do you think about the president's attack on the Supreme Court? By the way, now the second time he's done this.
Look, I think this president is a radical demagogue who has no regard for the Constitution and who desperately wants to fundamentally change America. And I think that he is seeing all sorts of things beginning to come in to surround him and to weaken him. And I think he's probably getting increasingly desperate. That's my take of his whole pattern now.
I like Marco Rubio for VP. What do you think?
I think he's a great guy. He's one of many very, very good people. And certainly whoever the nominee is going to have to have, I think we'll be surprised how many good choices there are.
Marco
would certainly be on anybody's short list.
Yeah. Do you see, you still kind of haven't answered the Rick Santorum question, and I'm not going to get an answer, am I?
Oh, which part?
About whether you'd team up with him.
No, I said we talk regularly, and I think that the next phase is probably to work together on the platform and to ensure that we have a conservative platform. And
I think that's very important.
And it puts Governor Romney on the spot of deciding is he prepared to work with us, or is he, you know, not prepared to work with us? And that'll say something. You know, he's the guy who went to CPAC and said he governed it as a severe conservative. And then his director of communication said, "Well, this is all just baloney. This is extra sketch. You just shake it up after the primary and you have a brand new slate."
I think we've got
a really good test. The platform's a great test of whether Romney wants to be with the conservative movement or his consultants.
Listen, we have probably one shot to get this right. That's how severe this situation is. So, Mr. Speaker, so we'll be watching the results tonight on Hannity at 9 Eastern. And as always, thank you for being with us. And thanks
good
for all you've been doing out there.
Bye-bye.
All right, toll-free, it's 800-941-SHAWN. If you want to be a part of the program, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. All right, we're going to continue our primary day coverage. Wisconsin, Maryland, and D.C. as we check in with former Massachusetts governor and GOP frontrunner, Governor Mitt Romney. That's all coming up next. Remember, full coverage tonight on Hannity. We're also going to be joined by Governor Sarah Palin as part of our coverage. She co-hosted the Today Show today. We've got highlights of that. I wonder how it was getting into the... And she even said, lamestream media. That's pretty funny. She'll join us tonight. And Dana and Stewart and much more. Hannity tonight, election coverage and the vetting of Obama, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel.